Hickman here last week was, you know, had such a reaction, Dick. I mean, it was because people appreciated him saying that. I mean, this is, you know, this is our industry, and I'm sorry that you don't understand and that you somehow think you're speaking for the animal better than the people who whose lives are ingrained with the animal. I mean, who are these people? And I don't want to be dismissive completely and say, why does their opinion, why does it even matter what they think? And at some point, you want to just tell them, your opinion isn't, it doesn't mean anything here. Because they don't understand what this is. It's obvious that they don't. Because they make up things, they're saying things that are just, you know, taking advantage of you know, the opportunity when it comes to, you know, the Lasix topic, and you see in their statements just spewing out and regurgitating falsehoods. It's just incredibly frustrating.
Yes, and comparing us to the cattle industry is, we're not attacking ourselves like the cattle industry doesn't do that. The cattle industry doesn't have a national plan to take over drug testing and do all these different things because we've been doing it wrong and everything we do is not right, and we compare ourselves to other countries and they're doing it right and America's doing it wrong, so American racism is barbaric and everything else. Well, the general public, even if they're not motivated like Peter, they pick up on that. They hear about that anecdotally. I mean, I'll go back to my friends, the Brits. You know, like, you remember the Kinky Friedman joke about the Germans were his second favorite people, who were his first, everybody else. I'm not a big fan of the Brits. And I'm not a big fan of British racing. So a couple of years ago, they announced, the British Horse Racing Authority is now going to test for over 8,000 races a year. And I'm like, gee, that's great. And I go to their fact book, their annual fact book that they put out in a year or two behind, and they'd raced 11,000 races. So they're not even close to having testing in every race like we do. And we test first, second, thirds at Monticello, lowest, you know, $2,500 purse, stuff like that. And then there's no, like, we're keeping track of statistics. And they just ran the Grand National, and 40 horses started. One didn't make it. And they said, well, the last few years, you know, we haven't had any catastrophic breakdowns, but we did have a couple in Cheltenham. Well, give me the catastrophic breakdowns per 1,000 starters in these races. Let me see what they are.
Yeah. No, I've talked endlessly about how ridiculous it is to try to compare, you know, the international the international racing in general. I mean, the way their horses train, their seasons, the way they're housed. I mean, they're not housed the way our horses are housed. I mean, this gets into the Lasix conversation too. You know, the way, you know, hay and straw is stored typically above the horses' heads. So there's a dust component and air quality component. That's one of the reasons that Lasix is important and useful. So there's,
you know, but we have a leadership on Madison Avenue that are Anglophiles and Francophiles, and that's all they care about.
Yeah. I'm glad we went in this direction and had, you know, and had particularly the surface portion, because it's going to be, you know, people are going to be discussing it coming out of I don't know what the formal study is going to be. It doesn't appear that it's going to have the same in California, that they're going to utilize the same format that we had in New York with the task force. But you know, we'll see how you know, the further fallout and the widening discussion. Dick, let me get a couple of Hong Kong topics covered as well.
Okay. Yesterday, racing at Happy Valley, 8 races, and a surprising chalk fest. it wasn't until the last race 8 did we get a $21 win. Every other horse was single digits, and we had an even money favorite, 3-2 favorite, 2-1, another 3-2. I mean, just a lot of chalk winning at Happy Valley. Yesterday, Speed did very well. They had more than their share of 5 furlong sprints, which is straight away. And he did extremely well in those races. So, and I looked at the, race 3 was a mile race. No pace. I mean, 27.89. I know they start the race when the starter presses the button, so you don't get the fast first quarter that we have with the running first start. But that's very slow, and that led to a lot of bunching up. So the first three horses drew 2.73. So the inside post did well, and then the outside posts were pretty far up the track. So that's kind of a constant trend that if you don't have pace, the outside posts going a mile or a mile, they have a big problem getting the job done. Sunday, we're back at Sha Tin, and Sha Tin has been cranking out information on Big Champions Day coming up on April 28th. But before I get to that, I will look at the Sha Tin card. And race 2, this is a 0-40. This is a class 5, but they run for almost $100,000. That's the beauty of Hong Kong racing, the purse structure. And race number 2, we're going 1,200 meters, 6 furlongs around, 1 turn. And post isn't bad. You can win from outside. You can win from the middle. And I did go with number 10, Lucky Storm, who is coming from post 4. Has shown real good speed in its prior starts, going longer. Now turns back to 6 furlongs. I think he can get the job done. I've been taking a little bit of money lately, which I like to see, because some of these horses that are dropping down, they're kind of hard to swallow when you see they've been going off at 80-1, even with the drop down. So this one gets in with 121 pounds, which is fairly, the correct weight. And I think he'll be very tough in race 2 underneath that. I like the 4, Otuato, and number 3, Adonis. So 10, 4, 3 in race number 2 at Sha Tin. Whatever you want to call it, late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. And then in race number 9, this was a class 3, and this is going 6 furlongs again. I went with Racing Fighter number 3. Zach Purton rides for CH Yip, and they win a lot of races together, and Zach's just dominating race riding at Hong Kong this year. He's been on this horse consistently in the last few starts, so no real acclimation process. And running very well. He can run up near the pace, can run from off the pace. Draws post too, so Zach's going to have to leave. But he does show the natural speed he did last time. And last time was first-time blinkers, so that seemed to quicken him up, and I think he's going to need that today. So Racing Fighter from the inside with the blinkers from post 2, I think will be hard to catch. He does carry 130 pounds. But he's been kind of around that weight anyway. Underneath, we'll go with the 12, Beauty Loyal. No, Mr. Croissant, my bad. Only had 2 starts, but they both were good. And just a young, improving horse that's a 3-year-old that just seems to be getting better, gets in with only 114 pounds. Reagan Bayless is going to ride. And draws the rail, so once again, it's going to have to use some speed to keep him getting shuffled back. But I do like that one on the improve in 3rd, number 5, Honest Way. Got up by a short head last time against similar company and now gets picks up weight off that effort, but basically stays against the same group of horses. So 3.12.5 in race 9 at Hong Kong Champions Day coming up. The QE2, the pre-entries have been announced. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 international Group 1 winners in the field.
Wow.
Including horses we're familiar with recently, Pakistan Star, Waikuku, Kira, Dark Dream. They've all been winning or second in the races leading up to this BMW race, stuff like that. The Champions Mile, when you see the ratings, you see why Beauty Generation has scared everyone away. She's rated at 127. The next horse, Conti, is 116. A couple of the others are down at 105, 108. They're basically Ken and Potter. So Beauty Generation will be the heavy, heavy odds-on favorite in the Champions Mile. And then the Chairman's Sprint Prize has a very good field, and that's probably going to have a full starting game with five international Grade 1 stakes winners in there, including Vidora, who had gone to Dubai and didn't do much, but he is back from Dubai, and he's rated at 114 pounds. So if she can bounce back to her prior form, she would be a factor. So they're going to be cranking out information the next 2 weeks on these three races, big purses, multi-million-dollar purses, and a big day of racing coming up on April 28th at Hong Kong. But a real nice card of 11 races at Sha Tin coming up early Sunday morning.
Well, and we should also mention Winx's finale, right, at Randwick?
Yes. Big card late Friday night into Saturday morning. And it's actually being simulcast into Hong Kong, and I'll try to get the figures on that, and I'll try to pull some strings and find out how much Hong Kong bet on the Australian races, because they're taking 6 or 7 rounds, and they might be taking the full card. And yeah, she does make her farewell race. It should be a farewell race. They haven't. I don't think they've carved that in stone, but I think it will be. The Ascot people have been pushing, and yes, it would be great if she went. But, you know, like the one trainer down there, I don't know if it was Mark Kaufman or someone, he said, you know, the planes fly both ways. You can come down here and race against us besides us going up there and race against you.
Okay.
As we talked about, the one who did it was Highland Real, who won $10 million in a Breeders' Cup, and he went down there, and he was beaten 3 or 4 lengths by Winx in the Cox Plate.
Right.
And I give Aidan O'Brien all the credit in the world for doing it. And, you know, Joseph O'Brien has won a Melbourne Cup, and, you know, Godolphin won last year with shippers and stuff like that. So it can be done. But then when you see Winx, it's like, maybe we'll try for another race.
Well, certainly has grown a fan base in North America that rivals any that I can think of, right? I can't think. We had interest in horses like Takeover Target and Black Caviar, but her longevity, and of course, we all seem to love Streaks. Streaks, you know, yeah. Streaks win hearts and minds, it seems. So that's part of it too, I guess.
Well, this is something that I can't say we're going to see again.
Yeah, well,
because at that level, who's going to run? What does she run? 23 Group Ones.
25, I think.
Sky Beauty.
25.
I think you're right. There was an argument about Sky Beauty whether she was good enough for the Hall of Fame, and I used to say she won 9 Grade Ones. It would have been 10 if she wasn't disqualified out of the gate in the spinaway. You know, that begun. There's a point where you're looking at her, and then you're seeing mares come along that are eligible that don't have that kind of record, and she raced at 4 and won carrying 130 pounds in the Hampstead. You're not going to see that much more often, fillies carrying that kind of weight in Grade 1 company. And Winx is just doing things, and just the amazing, amazing capabilities that she has, and how they've trained her, and how when Hugh Bowman had a suspension, they said, no, we're not going to race her. not that she has to have Hugh Bowman, but, you know, he's her rider, and that's the way it's going to be. He's suspended. We're going to skip that race. And they just kept her happy, and When you look at her record, I mean, the Cox Plate is just over a mile and a quarter. So she's won from 6.5 furlongs to 10.5 furlongs at the highest levels of competition against males, almost always against males. And Australia has some serious horses racing down there. You know, she's not racing in some country that's not known for racing. But for her to do what she's done is just remarkable. I mean, Mackaydee Diva winning 3 Melbourne Cups in a row, that was out of this world, and weighing some black caviar. And there's great horses out there. Sometimes you got to go find them, and she's found us.
Well, those that have been getting up in the middle of the night, setting alarms one more time for Winx this weekend. Dick, this was great. I appreciate the frank thoughts, and DJ Fisk, I know you don't do Twitter, but he gave you a big thumbs up on growing balls. That hit home.
Grow a pair, will you?
Grow a pair. There you go. There you go. As Andy's got the great line, be a man, be a man. That's
the Godfather one. Act like a man.
That's it. You can act like a man. Thanks a lot, Dick. We'll talk next week.
All right, Steve. Talk to you next week. Bye.
We're at Oak Lawn. We're staying here, and Jolan helping behind the board. Casey, unavailable, and hoping for the best on his end. Going to bring Tony Black in and continue. And we got a the topic of the day continues to be the Santa Anita storylines that are difficult to get away from, and the. The No Stick Friday has been scuttled, but at least for now, but there's been between the Ramon Dominguez option, the 360, and you may have seen the video from the interview that Ramon did with Christina Blacker. And how Ramon's design it has got basically a foam cylinder. In fact, the whole thing is a cylinder as opposed to the woven, even the cushioned crop of recent vintage, the last 6, 7, 8 years. They had an edge. They had a side that was sewn. And so, if the stick... hit a certain way, the edge could be conceivably hurt, even though the stick is not nearly as rigid as they used to be, but Ramon's design is at no point can the crop can his cushioned crop have a spot, have a portion with an edge. So it seems to me that no matter how gentle the stick is, it isn't so much the implement, no matter how benign. It appears that it's the arm motion. That's the image. That it doesn't matter. I mean, and again, having to try to explain to people, that think that the horse is being implored, being whipped. So, I don't know how many innovations are going to make a difference with the whip discussion, because it's still going to look, no matter how, no matter how soft the stick is. It's still going to look like the horse is being, quote unquote, whipped. So that's the part of this. That's the part of this that is very difficult to manage from an aesthetic from the aesthetics of it. Jolan asking, do you want to see if Tony's there?
We're here.
He is here. He was so quiet, Tony. You were like a mouse in there in the corner.
Like I said, Kylie's home from work today, so she makes me be very quiet. Makes life easier. But no, I have been listening to you, and boy, you've touched on everything from the racetrack superintendents, the handling of a racetrack, to the PETA and their outlook on racing, and then, of course, these new whips that Ramon Dominguez came up with, the Gentle Touch 360. You haven't missed anything, and as I'm listening to the program, you know, I have so much in my head that I would give as feedback, but of course we only have a limited amount of time. And, you know, when I was listening to about the racetrack superintendents, I do go to the symposium, the racetrack superintendent symposium, and I have been fortunate enough to get some education in that part of the field, and I've been exposed to good racetrack superintendents like Roy Smith, and he's educated me. And, you know, perception is everything, whether it's with what the racetrack looks like when it's loaded, what a jock's doing on a horse's back when he's waving his arm and stick, and like you were talking about, the perception of whipping a horse. Well, you know, you can't always change the uneducated public's view or their view of what is going on, you know? We can do a better job of educating them than what we've done in the past, because we've done nothing to really go out there and say, we're going to educate you to what we're doing with these horses. We're going to educate you to what we're doing with these racetracks. There's nobody speaking positive for horse racing other than maybe you and a few other people, but there's really no organized group out there saying, no, you listen to what we're going to tell you, because now you'll get a professional's opinion and point of view, not the layman or the PETA's point of view. You know, when we talk about PETA's point of view, they don't understand. We raise these animals and take tremendous care of them, and they're raised to utilize what is instinctually bred into them. Their ability to run and their instinct that makes them want to run. We don't make them want to run. We take advantage of an instinct that is bred into them that you couldn't change if you tried to. And when people say we make them run, I'm thinking, boy, you haven't been on one of these thoroughbred backs or as many as I've been on. I'm the expert. We don't make them run. Half the time I was trying to slow them down and control them. And it's really a shame, because we don't have a positive voice out there. You know, when we breed these horses, like I said, we're breeding them to be the beautiful athletes that they can be. We're not breeding them like the if you go to Florida and there's a breeding industry for cattle, big breeding industry down there for cattle. They breed them for one thing, to be killed, slaughtered, and eaten. We don't breed these horses to kill them, slaughter them, and eat them. They are involved in an athletic event. It's a highly physical, stressful athletic event, and in any stressful athletic event, you're going to have injury and breakdown. But it's not our purpose to kill these animals or to break them down. You know, they're well cared for. But it gets to be a whole subject that I could go talk about for the rest of the show, but I know there are things that maybe you consider me to be an expert in, and I know one thing, you are right. The perception of the public when it comes to hitting these horses, because of the dramatic use view of the whip, and it's called a whip. I hate to even call it a whip. I call it a crop, because as soon as you call it a whip, right off the bat, oh, well, you whip these horses, you know? It's a crop, a whip, and like I said, this Gentle Touch 360 whip that Dominguez came up with, I think if you look at it and the way it's constructed, it's not the feel of the whip against the horse's hide that is causing a reaction. It's the flash of the whip, the movement of your arm, the changing of holds with your whip in your hand. Your hand leaves the reins. The horses feel that. They see the whip come up, And with the peripheral vision, or when you show them the whip, or you come down and make contact with them, it's more the motion that they react to. You talk about horses have a pretty thick hide, and of course there is sensitivity there. But these new whips are, I guarantee I could let you hit me with it, and I wouldn't be reacting or flinching, because that's how gentle they are, you know, with the normal movement of a jockey's arm and in rhythm. You know, when you hit a horse, you hit them in a rhythm. It's not just haphazardly swinging it at them. You're actually moving it in a rhythm with their stride. But I think that they made one right decision out at Santa Anita, where they abandoned that no whip day. And I think the other day they used these General 360s at Keeneland.
Right.
You know, and I think you're going to see, where you're not going to change the public's perception overnight, but at least they'll start to realize we are making moves in a direction that makes it more understandable or more bearable for the public to watch you swing your arm. You know, and other than me going out there and come, which I don't advise any rider to do, come back and smack a couple of these PETA people with the whip on the way back, and let's see if they feel it. That would be maybe my way of handling PETA, because I think they're so far off base. They're trying to be experts in every field when it comes to the animal. And, you know, this is one field that's a unique industry, and my livelihood depended on it for many years. And I don't want to see it disappear, because it isn't the inhumane sport that they want to make it and play it up to be, you know. But these whips, it's more the motion than it is the feel of the whip that a horse reacts to. You know, I've been on horses and they react to sound and motion. I've walked horses down the horse path and somebody will come up to the horse path and walk over some dead leaves and the horse almost comes out from underneath you. Or there'll be a ticket on the racetrack, a losing ticket or a piece of program, and you'll be coming down the stretch and the horse will see it before you see it. And they'll either duck, dive, jump. I've seen them jump over a piece of paper like they're going over a 3-foot fence. So horses react to change. And for us to take the stick away, well, let me compare it to this. I'm going to take and put you on a motorcycle and say, I've altered your accelerator. I've changed your steering. And I've also affected your brakes in a way where you can only use them so many times, you're steering so many times, and you just have to deal with what's in front of you, you know, on this motorcycle and utilize them efficiently. But I'm not sure, but we're not going to have your steering the same, and we're not going to have your brakes work every time, or whatever. You know, the stick is part of a piece of equipment that riders have carried for many years, and it's important to have them have that instrument in their hand. It's part of, at times, safely guiding a horse, even though your reins and your bit is what you steer a horse with. But at times, your stick is there to wave it at them, make them pay attention. You know, I've had horses come up to something on the racetrack that's in front of them, their ears pop forward, they spot it, and they're ready to stick their toes in while they're going 35 miles an hour. In the next stride, they'll stick their toes in and go to what we call prop, or come to a complete stop. And the only thing that might help you keep them attentive and running forward was you spotted it because you saw their ears going forward. They spotted it, you spotted it, and you used a stern voice. You know, it's you chirp them, use a stern voice, and you reach back and you crack them. And that makes them get through that thing that they're looking at that's distracting them from running straight or running forward. And if you didn't do that, you might be going 35 miles an hour when they're coming to a complete sudden stop, and you'll wind up a few feet in front of them looking at them from the ground up. Now, because I've done that before. It's called propping. And when a horse props, sometimes the only alternative you have is to reach, crack him on the shoulder, yell at him. And you know what? Sometimes your voice works. But more times than enough, that swinging of the arm and the flashing of the rod of the stick and the touching them on the shoulder or the hind end makes them focus on you, not what's in front of them that they're ready to prop and stick their toes in, looking at. But, you know, it's just people like you. You hit on it, and you said it exactly. The perception is, well, you're whipping these horses, and that's inhumane. That's a perception, of course, because it's natural to say, oh, you're whipping them, and that's what's... That's an inhumane use of a piece of equipment used on the horse. But it's perception and it's wrong. It's a necessary part of the equipment.
Now, and the alternative, Tony, I mean, because this is obviously, you know, this is the early stages of a what'll be a process or will be a, you know, a series of changes or adaptations, let's call it. Let's speculate. You know, what else, you know, what else is available if, you know, if there's not going to be any version of a, you know, of a riding crop?
Well, you know, you always have your hand and maybe, but it just doesn't seem to work as well as having a crop. You know, listen, I've had animals and pets my whole life, and I love pets. But when I moved into this new house, they had what was called an invisible fence into this house because they had a dog. They also, my neighbor has a bark collar for his dog so he doesn't keep us up all night. Well, what are these things? These are electrical devices. What's Pete going to say about them? You know, you got an invisible fence, they got a bark collar on their dog. You know, the alternative is there really is no alternative. This is tradition. I mean, what are we going to do? Say, oh, well, you know, it's more humane to hit a horse with something that gives them a stinging reaction and it immediately goes away and doesn't leave marks and it doesn't leave welts. We'll go modern technology. We'll improve the electrical devices that are available to other animals. You know, when they're taking these beef cattle and running them into the slaughter chute, they use cattle prods to keep them moving. Well, what are we supposed to do? Use cattle prods on horses where it's instantaneous, it doesn't leave a mark, it goes away? No, that's all BS. There's no electrical device that's going to, you know, even though I think at times there have been riders known to be using something of that nature. I've heard. I don't know it to be a fact because I've never seen it out there. But, you know, and that's a real touchy subject. You know, we don't even really want to get too involved in that. But what is the alternative? There is no alternative. The alternative is let's do the right thing and let's teach people to use it properly, the riding crop, and let's make the crop appear to be and as soft and as gentle as you can make one to where you're not reaching and using it to cause pain on the horse's hide. What you're using it to do is create contact that can be something that gets their attention. The movement of the whip or the crop when they see it moving and it gets their attention. And let's do that. You know, like I said, this new crop that they're talking about, there's no opposition, I don't believe, to that. And it's a move in the right direction. You're modifying and changing some of the old equipment and bringing it up to a date and a standard that people maybe will accept in time. But we're not going to change anything overnight when it comes to the public's perception. And we don't have as loud a voice at times as PETA. You know, they're pretty loud and at times they're very effective in proving what they feel to be a point that needs to be proven. And most of the time, in this case, in horse racing, they're off base. They ain't got a clue. And it really incites me because I could use other words to explain what I think about PETA, but I don't use that kind of language in the air. But we can do things to make it appear, you know, this whip to be more gentle, if that's what they want us to do, and we go from there. What else can you do? You can't change people's thinking overnight.
I know. I suggested to Kim Sawyer, you know, who joined us the other morning, Rick flagged her down, and you know, she's a steward, and we talked about, you know, what their role in this might be, and you wondered about, and my friend Aaron Yagoda made a very good suggestion about how the riders in the breed shows, how they can't turn over, you know, they're instructed that they can't.
Pop, you know, the stick.
Right. But, I mean, is there anything?
Yeah.
Can that? I mean, is that enough, Tony? If you had it in your hand, you know, left or right, and you know, basically could just turn your, you know, turn your wrist to. I mean, is that enough to help or not?
Absolutely, and I suggested it on one of our last talks. If you wanted to do something, the only time you can cock the stick is to wave it at the horse. Wave it, you know, in front of their face. Wave it at them. And if you are going to touch them in the hindquarters or on the shoulder, it has to be handle up, shaft down, and you can only use it to touch the horse uncocked. And I guarantee you, these new sticks, I could say, Steve, it's uncocked. I'm going to sit on your back, and when I have this stick uncocked, I'm going to hit you as hard as I can from the shoulder with the stick, and you'll see. It's not something that creates pain on you, Steve. Believe me. But it does. The motion and the flash of it does get from the horse a reaction that is desired by the rider.
And that's the key. That's what you're trying to elicit out of them.
And I can't change perception. There's still going to be people saying, "Oh yeah, but you reach back. Yeah, it didn't come. You didn't have it cocked up, but you reach back and crack them." Believe me, Steve. This is just a perception, and I can't say it enough. I've said it too many times already. I can't change the public's perception, and we got to do a better job of trying to do that. But that's going to be a long, drawn-out process, just like the public's and a lot of people's perception that are in the business. Oh, floated racetracks are dangerous, this and that. They don't even understand the degree of what these tracks are compressed is different, you know, with the application of the hydraulic pressure on those plates. Flat is not necessarily compressed. It's just flat. And a lot of times they float these racetracks, they're flat. I could walk across it and you'd still see my footprint. But if it's not open, if a racetrack is closed for training, or we don't get rain during the races, you know, that flat surface allows the water to hit it and roll off into the drainage, you know, instead of penetrating the track. You know what I thought when it came to tracks? This will be real quick because this was just something I thought about the other day. You know, when some of these tracks where they were dirt, they went to synthetic and they went back to dirt, and I have nothing against synthetic. You know, I don't think there's enough information out there to totally justify that's all we should have. But, you know, maybe it has a use. But the tracks that went from synthetic back to dirt, is there maybe some underlying problem in the transition of going from synthetic back to dirt, and possibly it's left some underlying problem that maybe in Santa Anita weather brought out? Because wasn't Santa Anita synthetic?
Yeah, but they did put down almost like an asphalt at the bottom, but then that they rebuilt, you know, they basically rebuilt the track from scratch.
But is there something, as much as we don't have information, that's abundant information out there when it comes to, you know, maybe we haven't identified some underlying problem. I mean, Keeneland, weren't they synthetic, went back to dirt? You know, and maybe we'll have to gather some information, or maybe there is no information to be gathered. But there's so many situations out there that occurred at Santa Anita that contributed to this whole catastrophe between the weather, the shortage of horses, the racing offices trying to get horses to recycle to fill entries. There's a million reasons why everything, snowballed in a negative direction out there. So we're getting through it, and hopefully we'll have a positive light put on racing in California. In fact, I'm going out there in June. But we'll have a positive light and no more of these mishaps. But you know what? In any sport that's a highly stressful athletic, physically stressful athletic event, you're going to have injury. I don't care if it's human or animal. It's a highly stressful athletic event. There's no way you can totally eliminate.
No,
we don't live in utopia.
No, it's just not. It's not practical on that front, and that part of it.
And Steve, we don't force these horses to do this, and that's I'm the expert when it comes to that. I rode 34,000 races, over 34,000 races, and I've been on thousands and thousands and thousands of horses. You haven't been on one if you're telling me I'm forcing them to run. It's instinctually bred into them, and all that you're trying to do is control them to utilize them efficiently and effectively during training and in races. Didn't make them run. We're not making them run. It's their instinct. It's what they love to do. And if you talk and tell me any different, it's because you haven't sat on as many as I've sat on. And like I said, one more time. I'm the expert.
I love it, Tony. I appreciate it. The stick topic that's going to continue to be discussed, and I don't know if there's going to be a, if they'll figure out a way to have the experiment, but at least for now it's going to wait, and we'll see how how this proceeds. So I appreciate though you got the unique view with your experience.
All right, Steve, and you keep up the good work, and I just want to tell Casey my heart goes out to him, get better, and your assistant's doing a good job, Casey, but I will miss you. And hearts out to you, Case, thinking about you. Bye.
Thanks, Tony. Tony Black, everybody. We'll stay right here, and Joe's going to reach for Steve Askin. We'll talk to Steve, get some Derby Dozen and more. We'll get reaction and see where Steve shakes out. Haven't had a chance to read the post-weekend thoughts, and who's moving up the pecking order. So we'll get that in here next. And just saw, just a couple of minutes ago here, we had Omaha Beach in the paddock, and Dick Mandela. Yeah, being here says something really too. He not only did he walk with Omaha Beach, he came into the paddock and walked around with him the whole time. And anytime you see that, when you see Mandela with his horses schooling, he's always standing there and. Basically loving on him all the time. It was funny. I was in California a week and only saw Mandela maybe twice in passing, and then of course race day. So I said to him yesterday, I said, I'm in California a week. I barely see you. I'm here at Oaklawn for 10 minutes, and here you are. And here's Steve Askin. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I was you can appreciate the way Mandela dotes on his horses.
Oh, he's the greatest. That's why I'm pushing for him to get to the Derby. He hasn't been there in quite a few years.
Well, before we talk about Saturday and the way the horses lined up for the Arkansas Derby, and we'll talk a little Lexington as well. Steve, let's get some recapping in, and you can start. I don't know. You want to start with what you were most impressed with, or you want to go west to east, east to west? Anything you want to do, your call.
It doesn't matter to me. We can start closest to my home. Start in New York first.
All right.
Which actually also, I think, to me, is the, it was the most impressive of the three preps. I'm very impressed with the Tacitus. I mean, I didn't pay any attention to him when he ran in the Tampa Bay Derby. He had two starts. Won by a neck. Looked like, you know, it's an okay race. Then he doesn't run for 4 months. He shows up in the Tampa Bay Derby against some really good horses. And, you know, he splits horses, he comes through, and you can see he's still a work in progress. He's still green, and yet he wins going away. And I said, wow, I mean, this horse might be better than I thought, but he needs some work. He's still kind of green. Then he goes in the Wood Memorial, three starts, and gets absolutely plowed into coming out of the gate. I mean, it was just chain reaction with Jovia coming in and just wiping everybody out. And one, you know, it was just like a three-cushion billiard shot there. And he just got slammed into and literally turned sideways. You know, and for a young, inexperienced horse, you figured that could have been very detrimental. And you could see it got his blood up. And going into the first turn, he just wiped everybody. He bowled his way through. He was running no matter what, and he just bowled his way through and just knocked three horses out of his way. I can't say track to pace because the first two opened up such a big margin, but he was laying in fourth, in good position, and I thought he ran a really good race. I mean, he ran down Tax, who I thought ran a winning race, and I like the way he ran him down, and he did it in a professional way, except for the fact that his one habit, you know, when he gets to the lead, he did it in the Tampa Derby, he did it here too, he starts fooling around, you can see his ears flicking around, so he starts, you know, pulling himself up, which leads you to believe this horse has a tremendous amount of natural ability. We don't have any clue how good this horse is, because he's still, like I said, a work in progress and still needs to mature. I'm not a fan, as you know, of horses going into the Derby with only four starts, even though we had a horse last year win it with three, but that was justified. There are no justifies this year. And only three horses in the last 101 years have won the Derby with four starts or fewer. So the other two being Big Brown and Animal Kingdom. And Animal Kingdom had a ton of experience as far as his four races, because they were all distance races. And Big Brown, of course, was a freak who came along in an inferior year. But, history says it's not the way to do it, to go in with four starts. But he's learned so much in his last start and his last two starts that... you know, he looks like a horse who could get away with it, and I was just very, very impressed with him. I just think he's a really good horse, and it's Judmont, so I like that. I like the fact that he's a homebred, and I think he's got a very bright future. I can certainly see him winning the Derby. I was also impressed with Tax. I like the fact that he was able to lay off the top two and sit seven lengths off the pace, and was strong in the stretch, you know, and finished almost three lengths ahead of High Cal. So I certainly have to move him up, put him in the equation. He's only going to get better. And what I like about him, most of all, is his pedigree. I mean, he's one horse that there is absolutely no doubt he will get a mile and a quarter. He is strictly bred for distance. So, again, you have to look at him as a legitimate contender. The big question mark with High Cal going in the race was whether he was a one-turn closer. He ran like a one-turn closer. When you see a horse going one turn and they're like five, six lengths off at the eighth pole and they come flying late, a lot of times that's the way they want to run. When they go two turns, they wind up a little bit closer to the pace and they don't have that same closing punch. He showed to me that he is a two-turn horse. Now, is he as good at two turns? If you look at his Thoroughgraph numbers, no. You know, he regressed several points off the Gotham. He didn't actually come blowing away, you know, and down the stretch like he did at one turn. but he did run well enough to prove that he can win major races at two turns. I just don't know if he's ready to win the Kentucky Derby going a mile and a quarter around two turns. So from the Wood Memorial, I basically take the top two away as being very, very legitimate. So that's my take on that. Obviously, the tracks have been slow, so you can't go by times in the race. Cassidy has got an excellent thoroughgraph number. Big improvement off the Tampa Bay Derby, which I want to see. Yet he still has room for improvement. So numbers-wise, he's right there. Tax was even a bigger improvement. Tax had run a big race in his first in the Remsen, and he actually regressed when he won the Withers. He regressed several points, but he bounced back big time in this race. Obviously, you know, the layoff helped him a lot. So I think he's a horse that's on the improve. So both those horses have thoroughgraph numbers that put them right there where they can win the Derby off those numbers. So what's your take on the Wood?
I agree on all fronts. I thought that, Tacitus seems like he's, you know, in that nice flow at the right time. And the best element of this is that the mile in the eighth is where he's just starting to really drop down and really go. So the mile and a quarter, absolutely. Yeah, you think about the dam and what she was too, close hatches. And I think that Danny Gargan deserves a tremendous amount of credit. And the way he did this, you know, he had a plan and came out of the Withers and said, we're going to wait for the Wood, and I want to go to the Wood and then Derby. And he executed it. And, Danny Gargan has really, his management of a number of horses, you know, with quality is really should be applauded. Danny's fun and funny and a character, a racetrack character, but he's proving himself quite adept at handling horses and planning campaigns. So I thought that was important to note. And Heichel,
let me just sneak this in here. I think one of the reasons he did that is that he's the only horse in the race now that's coming into the Derby for 3 mile and an eighth races. So he's got plenty of foundation under him for sure.
You know, Steve, do you remember the horse that that going back a few years that you and I, we had that mile and an eighth, it was coming out of a Florida Derby, and there was one horse that had that same thing going for him, and I've always watched for horses since then that have that. And I'm going to say that it was Icebox.
Oh, Icebox, yeah. Yeah, well, the thing is, Icebox, everybody knows he should have won the Derby. He was by far the best horse in that race. But he was a horse with a lot of bottom under him. And, you know, it's unfortunate the trip he had. But that's why I've always been pulling, you know, figuring that there's a Derby somewhere with LaPenta's name on it, because he was... He should have won that one, and that was a big, big, big disappointment for him.
I'm pulling up his PPs because that Florida Derby. He had run in an allowance, and the Fountain, and then the Florida Derby, and if I'm not mistaken,
I don't remember,
but Pleasant Prince.
I think
Prince.
He won like an allowance in mile 16th or mile 8th, then the Fountain of Youth, I think, and then the Florida Derby, I believe.
Well, the horse that he beat, Pleasant Prince, both of them had the mile and an eighth thing going. Slap those headsets on for a second. We got a treat for everybody. Turn it around, wrong direction, spin it around. There you go. A very quick visit with Ron Moquette. I said he would come through at some point. He'd wander by, and I grabbed him quickly, Steve. So let's put the Wood on hold and say good morning to Ron Moquette.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. Always great to be here. And this is the third visit in 4 years. And say hello to Steve Haskin, who's back there in the, on the line.
How you doing, Mr. Haskin?
Hey, Ron. Everybody knows that your success is due to your wife. So
Hold on. I gotta fix his headset.
There we go. I got
you. He said your wife is the key to everything.
Oh, by far. Yeah, I'll take that. She's. I'd like to take some credit, but I can't. It's all the barn and her.
Well,
you're a big man.
Yeah.
Well, your owners too, because they got to put up with you.
That's it.
Which is a job for everybody.
I think that owners that I train for should get a weight allowance. You know, like the bug weight. You should start off. You get the Ron Moquette 5 pound allowance.
I'm sure they'd love it, right? Too funny. A couple of quick things. How are you gonna corral Mitol? He's gonna be loose out there.
Well, he's got a lot of advantages to us, and you know, that's the deal. Is good horses have to figure out a way to beat other good horses when things don't go their way. Where he's the lone speed, and he's got a jockey that's very familiar with my horse, and we have a jockey that's never seen my horse. So we've got some disadvantages to overcome, but I'm really proud of our horse, the way he got to the race and where we're at. So we're ready to give it the old college go.
And I'm surprised that there's not – how is it that the five-horse field, nobody wants to
– You know, they was trying to hustle the race, and I pay attention, and the Commonwealth felt – You know, it was so big, it had 14 horses or 13 horses.
Yeah.
But a lot of that had to do with the people, I don't think, necessarily wanted to come in and try these two horses here. They thought that it might be an easier spot somewhere else. You know, these are good horses at this track. And you know, they all went up there to Keeneland and ran against each other, some of them. But I think it's going to be fun. There's a lot of people talking about it. You know, we actually had people wanted it to be a match race. So you're going to have a high quality horse win the race, and whether it's Mitoli or Whitmore or whoever, but it's going to be, you know, we got 500,000 reasons to run, so we're going to try real hard.
I mean, exactly. I mean, a purse like that, and that's what's so crazy. The Commonwealth, I think, was. It's a much smaller pot, and I don't know.
We had horses ship out of here to run up there. You know, the horse that was second trained here all winter, Lucas's horse. But he had a good reason.
Yeah.
You know, he won the race.
Yeah.
So I don't blame him ever.
But plus proximity to the partners in the Churchill Downs Racing Club. I mean, that there's some mitigating, you know.
Yeah, and this is one of the times that I would love it to be a full field. I'm... You know, whenever you're usually an off the pace kind of horse, you don't want the main foe to be up there on his own, you know, setting fractions that he wants to set.
Sure.
So I would have loved to have had 10 or 12 horses in here.
I want to ask you about, in addition to Saturday, I want to ask you about today, because in that eighth, you face, it's sort of a similar circumstance. Talk Viv to me comes back for Team Valor, and Rusty's got his nice filly, or mare now, and you've got that Treble, who looks like there's some quality to her. I don't know if she's able to intercede with Awestruck and Talk Viv.
Well, we're ahead from beating Awestruck at Churchill Downs in the Grade 3. You know, I've had an uncanny knack of being able to find allowances that read like Grade 2s this year. Every time you look up, you're in an allowance race, and it's filled full of horses with a G2 or G3 beside their name. So, it's a great race. You got a really nice filly coming off a layoff, and you know that she's not being pressured to run, so she's ready to run, or she wouldn't be in there. And we hope we get a good trip, and hope it sets up right for us.
Looking as well at Oaklawn tomorrow and Saturday, there's some very good allowance and maiden action. Tell us about Subiaco and Tipizar in the 4th and the 7th on Friday.
I ran both those fillies against a filly named Aw Emma.
Yeah.
And one ran third, one ran fourth, and then we brought them back. And I've tried to set